Well, after this digression I made for your practical benefit, let us return to the serious question we touched upon. I shall begin with the account I promised you of the rise and fall of that society of terrestrial beings which had as its motto, "The earth belongs to our common creator and is equally free for all his creatures." The information about this will give you the possibility of understanding the first and principal reason why this terrible periodic process of reciprocal destruction must almost inevitably occur on your planet among these unfortunate three-brained beings of our great megalocosmos. And you will likewise learn how the local nature, as it might be called, when something unforeseen prevents it from functioning correctly for the purposes of the common cosmic trogo auto ego crud, adapts itself in such a way that the results can blend in conformity with the harmony of this great cosmic law. That society of terrestrial men beings arose, as I have already told you, 4 or 5 centuries ago on the continent of Asia, in a city then existing under the name of Marsilopolis. And it arose in the following circumstances. At that period, the processes I have mentioned were flowing more often than ever on that continent. Some of these processes took place between different communities and some within the borders of a single community. These latter processes afterwards came to be called civil wars. One of the chief causes of these terrible processes, both between and within communities on the continent of Asia, was a religion only recently formed and based fantastically on the teachings of a genuine messenger of our endlessness, Saint Muhammad. The society I'm speaking of was founded by the brothers of a fraternity then existing in Central Asia under the name of the Assembly of the Enlightened. Here, it must be noted that in those days, the brothers of that fraternity were greatly venerated by the other three-brained beings of almost the whole of your planet. And hence, this brotherhood was sometimes also called the Assembly of All the Living Saints of the Earth. This brotherhood of three-brained terrestrial beings had been founded long before by beings who had noticed in themselves the consequences of the properties of the organ Kundabuffer and had come together to work collectively for their deliverance from these consequences. And so, when these terrible processes of reciprocal destruction became altogether too frequent on their continent of Asia, certain members of this fraternity, with the most venerable brother Olmanitabur at their head, decided for the first time to see whether it might be possible, if not, to abolish this terrible phenomenon from their planet completely, at least to diminish such a crying evil. Devoting themselves to carrying out the decision, they then visited various countries of the continent of Asia. And wherever they went, they preached very movingly against the colossal crime and sin of these acts of men, and thus found many people earnestly in agreement with them. The result of their impartial and truly humanitarian labors was the formation in the city of Mosulopolis of that large and serious society of men beings called The Earth Belongs to Our Common Creator and is equally free for all his creatures. From the very beginning, the members of this society accomplished many things for this aim that no other beings of the earth were able to accomplish, either before or since. And they were able to do this only because, from the start, almost the whole of their program was very well conceived from the point of view of its feasibility in the conditions existing there. Among other things, the basic program of the society laid out a series of steps to obtain the following results. First, the establishment for all the beings of the continent of Asia of one common religion, which they proposed to found upon the teaching, slightly changed, of the sect known as the Parsis. Second, the adoption of one common language, which was to be Turkoman, the oldest language on the continent of Asia, whose roots had entered into many Asiatic languages. And third, the fundamental program of this society included the aim of organizing in the center of Asia, in the city of Marjalan, the capital of what was called the Khanate of Ferghania, a single central government for all the countries of Asia under the name of the Council of the Elders, and members of which had to be honorable beings from all the Asiatic communities. And it was given this name because only the oldest and most honorable beings were worthy to participate in it. According to their understanding, only such beings of their planet were able to be impartial and just toward all other beings of the earth, irrespective of their religion or nationality. From the time it was founded in the city of Mosulopolis, this society was composed of beings belonging to almost all the Asiatic communities. Among them were beings called Mongols, Arabs, Kyrgyz, Georgians, Little Russians, and Tamils. Even the personal representatives of Tamerlane, the famous conqueror of that time. Thanks to their intense, truly impartial, and unselfish activity, these wars and civil wars, which had been on the increase on the continent of Asia, began to diminish. And it was anticipated that many other good results might be attained for their aims. But just then something happened, which led to the breakup of this eminent society of men beings on that unparalleled planet. All the following events came about through the influence of a famous philosopher named Atarnach and of the theory expounded by him in a treatise under the title, Why Do Wars Occur on the Earth? When this philosopher made his appearance among the members of the society, all their ideas were turned upside down. I know the story of this philosopher, Atarnach, very well, because during my studies of the results of the labors of the most saintly Ashiad HaShemash, I needed to know about the activities of this philosopher in detail and also about him personally. This Atarnach was born in that same city of Mosulopolis into a family of what are called Kurds. After reaching responsible age, he became a great learned being. Learned, that is, for the planet Earth. This Kurd, Atarnok, began by devoting many Earth years to the persevering study of every possible question that he thought might give him an answer to the question, what is, in general, the sense and meaning of man's existence? And in the course of his studies, it seems that somehow there fell into his hands a very ancient but well-preserved Sumerian manuscript. This manuscript was well-preserved because it had been inscribed with the blood of a being named Chairman on skins of the snake being called Telianjax. As my investigations made clear to me, the contents of this manuscript, inscribed by some learned being of ancient times, greatly interested the philosopher Atarnok, who was particularly struck by one passage in the manuscript where the following supposition was made. In all probability, there exists in the world some law of the reciprocal maintenance of everything existing. Obviously, our lives also serve for maintaining something, great or small, in the world. The idea expressed in the ancient manuscript so captivated the philosopher Atarnok that from then on he devoted himself entirely to the study of this one aspect of the question that had interested him. This idea served as the basis for a whole plausible theory, which, after several years of investigation and minute experimental verification of his conclusions, he expounded in his chief work entitled, Why Do Wars Occur on the Earth? I also became acquainted with this theory of his. It was indeed close to reality. All the hypotheses of this Kurd, Atarnok, were very similar to the essence of the great fundamental cosmic law, Trogo Auto Egocrat, existing in our universe, which I explained to you more or less in detail when I was speaking about the holy planet Purgatory. It was very definitely proved in this theory of the philosopher Atarnak that there must inevitably exist in the world a law of the reciprocal maintenance of everything that exists, and that this reciprocal maintenance is assisted by certain chemical substances through which the process of the spiritualization of beings, that is to say, life, takes place. And these chemical substances serve the maintenance of all that exists only after the life of a being ceases, that is, when a being dies. The theory of Atarnak also fully proved, with the help of many logical confrontations, that at certain periods there must infallibly take place on the earth a specific quantity of deaths, which in their totality must yield vibrations of a specific degree of power. Once, at a general meeting of the being members of the society, the earth belongs to our common creator and is equally free for all his creatures, this anything but ordinary terrestrial three-brain being, who was also the elected representative of the whole population of the country called Kurdistan, at the request of his fellow members, expanded his theory very eloquently and in detail, and thus aroused great confusion and agitation among the members of the society. They were so struck by his theory that at first a sepulchral silence prevailed among them. They were so stupefied that no one could stir. Only after rather a long interval did such an uproar break out that it seemed as if each one's life depended on the degree of his excitement and the vehemence of its expression. The result of it all was that late that night they unanimously decided to select from their number several learned beings to investigate jointly the details of this theory, which had impressed them so strongly, and afterwards to make a report on it to the General Assembly. From the very next day, the selected learned members of the society set to work very earnestly to familiarize themselves with the theory of this Atatnach. But to the misfortune of all terrestrial three-brained beings of future times, it turned out that although most of the appointed learned members were well advanced in years, and those baneful functions which make the being of your favorites jealous and greedy were almost atrophied in them, nevertheless, for various reasons, chiefly owing to their upbringing in childhood, certain of them had not yet acquired through experience to be convinced that their dreams, ensuing from that abnormal education of theirs, could never be realized, and that they were therefore not disillusioned enough to be fully impartial and just. And in consequence of this, from that very same day, as they became familiar with the details of this astonishing theory, they began to get into the state of typical terrestrial beings. That is, they began to forget what had been said in that theory which had so struck them, and gradually returning, as is proper to three-brained beings there, to their former purely subjective and thus always changeable convictions, they forthwith split into two opposing parties. Some of them began, without any logical criticisms, to take on faith all the suppositions advanced in the theory. Others, however, as is proper to most of the learned beings of the earth, began to say and to argue just the opposite, finally working themselves up into a state of hostility, not only against the theory, but even against Atatnach himself. In short, my boy, those learned beings who had been chosen to make the detailed study of the theory of Atatnach, instead of helping to extricate the other members from their bewilderment and agitation, and to settle the disputes among themselves, only increased the confusion of their ideas. And gradually, in the common presence of each member of this earnest society, data automatically arose for two completely opposite convictions. The first of these convictions was that everything takes place precisely according to the theory of the philosopher Atatnach. That is to say that wars and civil wars must proceed periodically on the earth quite independently of the personal consciousness of men. And the second was the conviction held previously by all the members of the society, according to which, if any succeeded in carrying out the program their society had undertaken, it would be possible to destroy this evil on their planet, root and branch, after which everything would proceed in a desirable order. From then on, disputes, quarrels, and disturbances arose among all the members of the society, and in this case also the same began to proceed as had long before become customary there. These quarrels and disturbances soon spread to the ordinary beings, that is, to the citizens of Mausolopolis, inflaming their abnormal psyche. I do not know how all this would have ended if the brothers of the Assembly of the Enlightened had not arrived just then and taken a hand in this affair. Due to their influence, all the members of this serious society gradually quieted down and started once again to reflect and deliberate peaceably and earnestly upon what to do in the future. The result of their serious reflections and deliberations was that they unanimously elected Atarnok as their chief director and begged him to help them find some way out of this situation. After several meetings directed by the Kurd philosopher Atarnok himself, the members of the society came unanimously to the following categorical conclusion. In accordance with the laws of nature, wars and civil wars must always proceed periodically on Earth, independently of man's will. And this is because at certain periods nature requires a greater quantity of deaths. In view of this, we are all obliged to recognize with great sorrow, but with inevitable inner resignation, that no decision of man's reason can abolish the shedding of blood between states and within a state. We therefore unanimously resolve to wind up our current affairs and put an end to everything undertaken by our society, and then, perforce, to separate and go home to take up again the inescapable burden of daily life. It was only after this categorical resolution was passed and all the members of that serious society had unanimously decided to begin that very day liquidating all their affairs, that the Kurd Atarnok, who, although considered there as truly learned, was nonetheless very proud and self-loving, ascended the rostrum and spoke as follows. My honorable colleagues, I am sincerely grieved that unintentionally I have been the cause of the dissolution of this great philanthropic undertaking, to which you, the wisest and most honorable men of all the countries of the earth, have for several years devoted more impartial and unselfish efforts than anyone on earth has ever made or ever will be able to make for others. This is to say, for beings quite unknown and indifferent to you. For a number of years, you have labored unceasingly to obtain for the masses what is most essential for their welfare, and although I too have labored upon my theory for many years, also for people unknown to me, this theory has brought all your tireless efforts and benevolent aspirations to nothing. The consciousness that I am to blame for all the misunderstandings that have arisen among you has given me no peace these last few days, and I have been thinking and pondering continuously whether there is not some way to repair this involuntary fault of mine. And so, my wise colleagues, selected from all the countries of the earth, I wish to share with you the final conclusion to which my deliberations have brought me. If the universal laws I have discovered are an obstacle to the means you were counting on to bring a certain happiness to mankind, these same laws, however strange it may seem to you at first glance, could, provided they are used otherwise, serve for the attainment of the aim we've set ourselves. Now, listen to what we must do to attain this aim. The results of all my researches clearly prove that at certain periods, nature requires a specific number of deaths on the earth. At the same time, I have succeeded in establishing that for the needs of nature, it makes no difference whose deaths these are, whether of people or of other forms of beings. From this, it follows that if the number of deaths required by nature is made up by the deaths of other forms of life, the required number of deaths of men will obviously be proportionately reduced. And it will be quite possible to achieve this if all the members of our society continue to work with the same intensity, only no longer for the aim of carrying out our former program, but to revive on earth on a larger scale than before the ancient custom among men of offering sacrifices to their gods and saints by destroying the lives of other forms of beings.